Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Cole Hornaday.
Hey.
Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
Chris Casso. How is everybody?
Still great.
Still great.
After all these years.
After all these years.
Gosh, it seems all like right. You were just here a couple
still
of minutes
crazy.
Ago.
So, that's funny. It's still crazy after all these years. Who is that? It's not
Paul Simon.
Billy Joe. Oh, Paul Simon.
I do believe it's Paul Simon. I was going to say Hall & Oates, but wait. I had to go tripping back through my AM radio childhood era.
The reason I bring that up is here in Seattle, we're having a couple of big concerts coming up. Tonight, Beyonce is playing CenturyLink Field.
Yeah, somebody I know I'm Facebook friends with is streaming live right now.
Streaming live from the Beyonce concert. That
yes.
cannot be legal.
And The Who were in Portland. 2 nights ago.
Wow. And Elton John is playing Safeco on Friday.
Billy Joel is here this week.
Oh, maybe it's Billy Joel I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Piano Man. All right. So, we're talking about musicians because it's awesome. Let's start off this episode with a little bit of reader mail.
What?
I have reader mail here.
You mean people are actually watching?
Yeah, or listening, or sometimes, you know, when
Very
I screw quickly, up the video, they just have to listen.
Oh, man.
So, reader John E. writes, and this is for you two. What was it like when you first started working at a comic shop? Now, we've talked about working in the comic store before a couple weeks ago. He says, I know it's not an easy job, but when you were offered the position, did you freak out and celebrate? He goes on to say, working at a comic shop has been a dream of mine since I was a kid, but I'd imagine once the curtain is pulled back, it's a world of difference. Now, I know that Chris can speak quite eloquently on that. Let's hear from Nicole. Nicole, when you were first offered the job here at the Dungeon, A of all, was this your first job in a comic book store?
Yes.
And when you were offered the job, were you like, I'm over the moon?
I was very excited. Yeah. And there was a sale going on here.
And then she met me.
Lycan at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, you needed the job.
Yeah, I quit my other job because it was awful. It was working at Specialties, and I hate them, worked there.
Those sandwiches are terrible.
I walked out. So I decided, what do I want to do that I'm excited about, that I'm going to actually like to go to work?
Yeah.
And I wanted to work at a comic book store, and Cole Hornaday here had connections because he knew Chris Casso, and I put in my resume. They just so happened to need somebody at that time, and I got the job, and I was very excited. But it was also very scary because I'm not one of those people who is a lifelong comic book reader.
Right.
I dabbled. So I felt a lot of pressure to know a lot of information, to be able to answer all of the questions ever.
Because now you're supposed to be an authority.
Because I'm supposed to be an authority. And luckily...
This woman did her research like you wouldn't believe. I would go visit her in the little studio apartment where she was living at the time. And she would have a stack like this, you know, that she's... And I'm like, do you like these books? She's like, doesn't matter. I got to do the research. I got to know what I'm talking about.
She only knew the interview right before her was a person who we were, the owner and I were just like, so hello, you know, and we were just like, what books do you like? And it's not that we needed like a list or anything. We just like, just tell us that you like a thing. And that person was just like, books. And they were like, what type of books? They're like, comics. I'm like, which ones do you read? Ones with pictures. And it was just sort of like, say a word. Just give me a word.
So
I will accept anything.
Like three words. And they were like, Yahiah.
Yeah.
Warren Ellis and Greg Rucka, and you're done.
I remember, I put my writerly skills toward a glowing letter of recommendation, and Chris was like, yeah, you didn't really need to do that.
But I am so appreciative because I had some backing there. And I definitely was afraid of the gatekeeping mentality, going into the comic book store and not having that information to back it up and be like, I got cred.
Right.
So I would be a little weary, but I would always be willing to look things up and find out information on stuff. It was a let me Google that for you.
Yeah.
And people were pretty welcoming and accepting. And Chris was very, very kind to me and was just like, don't read every comic ever because you'll hate the comic industry. Read things that you like and are passionate about and then share that with the customers, you know. So that's what had me broaden my horizons too. Just check new stuff out.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
That was awesome advice.
Yeah. Good life advice.
I never want
just working in a retail store.
Yeah. I never want to have somebody or deal with somebody who thinks they know anything or everything or should know everything. There's times where like I'll be helping a customer and somebody from across the store will try to correct me, but they weren't listening to the actual context of the conversation. They were just factually trying to correct me on the thing.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it doesn't matter which issue that happened in. Right. Because they were asking about something that's not that.
But anyway, some people,
also, none of this is real.
Some people just need to prove their intelligence. Now, you, we've discovered, were actually like an illegal child laborer in the comic book industry.
What? I can't confirm or deny that. What? Now, my first day was kind of great because I think I was young enough to not really be in that like kind of place, but I was just like, cool, what do you want? What do you need from me?
Yeah.
And the first day I worked was like the hottest day of that summer. And the store actually had a special guest. It was Jim Steranko, who we were just oddly mentioning about on break.
Whoa.
And Jim Steranko, very famous comic creator, did some amazing Captain America and tons of other things.
Nick Fury. Shield.
Yep. Yeah. And and so
nice visuals in comic book storytelling.
Yeah, the amazing person.
Big
and
deal.
To get here in the Northwest and do a signing.
Wow.
And so they were doing the signing in the upstairs of the store, the hottest place ever because of it was, you know, the temperature, whatever. And
science.
In Seattle, there's no air conditioning, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so the thing is, they wanted to have the back door open to the back room. And the back room was like cold concrete. And they just needed airflow. And they're like, but we need to make sure people don't steal things and come in or out. So like, just sit down in front of the door and read comics. And it was just like, I was like, that's it? Do you want me to organize anything? You're like, no, just stand guard. And it was just like, but I'm like, 13. But so basically I was like, okay, I'm just gonna sit down and read some comics in the cold breeze here in the shadow. And Steranko's having heat stroke.
Oh geez.
And I didn't know who he was, so I didn't care, so missed opportunity, you know.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, I was comfortable reading comics on my first day.
Didn't he say something to you? Didn't you meet him in any way?
Hey, keep up the good work, kid.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. They were probably carrying him to the...
I think I created like a movie image in my head of this young kid like, fuck up, kid, or so. I don't know.
The other way around, they were like, taking him on the stretcher and he's like, just like, fuck up.
Like Orson Welles giving... Yeah. Advice to anyone.
I'll note though that generally I never really get to read comics while working because I'm working. So for a first day, that was like, okay, cool.
Never again.
It's surprising again. You know so much you do, because I would assume that if I spent as many hours as you did in a comic book store, I would not want to read comics when I went home.
No, I don't.
Yeah. You don't?
No.
How do you absorb all of this then?
Osmosis.
Must be.
You sleep on the comics, and then yes. By the morning you've gotten some. Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I have to say that from starting working at Comics Dungeon and then seeing my friend Josh, who I've known for almost 13 years now, he helped me to get into serialized comics, and he knew just like the handful of stuff I was reading, and I went to go visit him, and I would just be like, oh, that's blah, 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 and I would just be rattling off all this information, and he's like, how do you know these things? It's like, you work in a comic book store, you're going to hear enough and research enough, and even if I'm not reading the material.
When you enjoy the stuff, it's like when children like instantly learn everything about Pokemon within a day or two.
Yeah.
It's like they didn't actually really do the research. They just were fascinated enough that they retain things that pass by them.
Yeah.
And so that just kind of happens after a while, because like people will be like, God, I don't even know what the first appearance of Punisher is. So like, it's Amazing Spider-Man 129. They're like, how did you know that? And so it's like, because people ask for it all the time. Because
I've been here for decades.
You just hear it enough and you're like, yeah, it's that one, you know? But that's true of like everything. You work in a bookstore and suddenly you remember whatever the person wrote this thing during a year. I don't know.
See, I will probably only learn those like first appearance and all that backlog of information when John leaves, you know? Because otherwise I just go like, oh, John knows. Or somebody, you know, or they know what they're looking for when they come in.
Well, I'm proud to not know everything.
I don't... I'm like probably the least knowledgeable on that stuff, you know, on staff, but that's fine because we have staffing that does know those things.
All right. Well, that's a question that comes to us from listener John E. So if you have a question you'd like to ask our panel here, email it to us at perfectmompodcast@gmail.com. Thank you guys for pulling back the curtain on working in a comic book store once again. And let's move on to our next topic and talk about public domain characters. Now, Cole and I did a panel jumper about Octobriana, which is a character in the public domain, so any creator can take her likeness and do with which as they please without having to license her. What other characters are there in the public domain, and what are some good adaptations of those characters?
Well, they're a boatload of superheroes from the 40s, from the Golden Age, that because... What we have tend to forget is that there were probably more superhero and horror comic books being produced at that time than there are hundreds more on the newsstands than there are now. Am I correct in assuming this?
Yeah.
And they were all, most of them were all seat of the pants, fly by night publishers that were just cranking these things out weekly. But in latter days, creators have sort of been fascinated about resurrecting those. In the early aughts, Alex Ross started his company Dynamite. I'm always assuming that was his company.
I never got that impression. It's just that they like apparently bought his soul at some point.
Well, and he does every cover.
Yeah, because he does all the covers. But he and Jim Krieger had a hand in the Project Superpowers. And Project Superpowers, those characters were all Golden Age public domain superheroes. And then there was, but I thought it was, and there were tons, there was like the main core series, and there were tons of spin-off solo books, and they were all... frighteningly mediocre.
They
all had beautiful Alex Ross covers. That poor guy was working day and night to get those cranked out because Lord knows he can't finish a book.
No, I think drawing obscure Golden Age characters is his fetish.
He was truly inspired, but they, I mean, I slogged through the first arc of Project Superpowers and was bored to tears. I have more, but I don't.
So, Nicole, you had.
I just wanted to start off because when I was researching this for the podcast tonight, I found a Wikia page that's all public domain superheroes.
Oh, really?
And it's pdsh.wikia.com, and there are thousands.
It's a pretty good resource.
And thousands of things that stuff Golden Age for sure, you know, like little one-off little magazines in the cutesy time when everyone was over, you know, superheroes after the war and all that kind of stuff. And that was just, it was overwhelming almost to think about, like, I don't even know what to look for, you know. So.
Well, they were all very much alike. There were 1,001 analogs or copies of Superman.
Yeah.
They were just...
go ahead.
No, you sure?
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, they were just tossing them out because of the popularity. And so they would go through these sequences of just kind of like, just make a word and have a gender. And they're like, Aquaman, Aquaman's Waterman. No, that's taken. That's his name. Or the Seaman, Trident Man, whatever.
And they all had sidekicks. All these characters had sidekicks.
And then the 80s happened, and that was just all of it.
So the thing is, they're amazingly hollow characters because of the storytelling. They're all archetypes. So that's why the Project Superpowers is useless to me because... Mm-hmm. They just want, they're like, free characters, just do a thing. And they're going to have nostalgia because somebody who was alive during that period wants to throw money because they remember a character named the Magnet.
And
guess his power set.
Dynamite's still doing that stuff with the Mask series and the Shadow.
And the Shadow.
Black Cat and the...
And then Alan Moore did the Terra Obscura books.
That's where I was going to go with.
And what's interesting is that there are characters that will start to overlap. These public domain characters show up in different people's books, like the Terror or the Black Terror.
Yeah.
You know, is in Terra Obscura and Project Superpowers.
Yeah.
Because nobody owns them. So, and in Moore's hands, and I think Peter Hogan was there. And I think Alan Moore's daughter wrote some of them too.
She did like the Albion stuff.
Okay. Those were better.
Yes. They realized what they were. They were hollow. So instead, their focus was on creating characters that didn't that played with the idea that they had powers, but it wasn't about, we didn't care that it was the Scarab or the woman in red. Mm-hmm. It was this guy who they kept on being like, hey, Bob, well, I'm the Scarab. Yeah, Bob, how about that? And they just created likable people mm-hmm. who happened to have powers and mm-hmm. were dealing with weird things. So the Terra Obscura is actually one of my favorite runs, like short runs. That dealt with a bunch of useless characters.
But they were miniseries, right? They were like six-part miniseries. I don't think and were there two or three of them?
I thought there were two.
Because I don't think I finished the second one.
But they kind of kept coming back, and I did appreciate that because the whole thing started from Alan Moore's Tom Strong, which was a tribute to like science heroes, like pulp style.
And Doc Savage.
Yep. And there was a opposite version of Earth on the other side of the solar system, and over there, there's Tom Strange, and they were in crisis because a Galactus kind of guy showed up, and Tom Strange jumped from planet to planet, like physically jumped without a ship to get to Tom Strong, and then bring him back. But in the time it took to jump from planet to planet, like decades moved along, mm-hmm. and all these Golden Age heroes were like either old, dying, or like forgotten, and it was just like a really fun idea.
See, like, know? Well, in the hands of a more imaginative or inspired writer, you can take any just falderall and make it good. Now, the series I really enjoyed, which I don't think everybody got as excited about that we used public domain characters, was Marvel's The 12, which was written by J. Michael Straczynski and drawn by Chris Weston, who's a marvelous writer. And the only fall down with that is that I think it ran 5 issues, and then
it
went on hiatus for like 3 years, which was miserable.
Yeah.
Because Straczynski either got petulant with something at Marvel, or I mean, he withdrew because of personal issues, not because of.
But like Weston, I think, was actually the main problem on that. But then Straczynski was also petulant.
So. But ultimately, they finished the series. I mean, it's very typical of how a lot of. It's not an original premise. I mean, these characters were all fighting overseas in World War II and got thrown into suspended animation. Where have we heard this before? and get resurrected and are. But the lovely part of the story was them as a group suffering. I'm sorry, Chris. What did I do to you?
No. Sorry, I was just trying to find a way to make a verb of them being frozen, and I was like, they got Steve Rogered. Sorry,
I think which that's is okay fair. Because this is all in the Marvel universe.
Yeah, they got
Roger Dodgered.
They got Rogered.
Well, as a fun aside,
sorry.
Yeah,
I don't know. Aside to superheroes, and mixing it up a little bit here. When I looked at that Wikia page, I found that Bat Boy from Weekly World News of like 1992 or something that. Who it was this tabloid like fake,
phenomenon.
Spider Woman found in Arizona or something like that.
Yeah.
It's just this sensational, silly stuff that was fun. I fell in love with Bat Boy. He was like this. It was just a picture of this kid who was like,
yeah,
and he had like
very,
pointy ears. He was like screamed like a
cover.
Scream kind of face. Yeah.
Yeah,
always loved him. And Peter Bagg actually did a comic book featuring Bat Boy
inspired
at one point. And because it's technically a public domain.
Yeah.
So he pulled it and did something really silly with it. And
because I know there was also a musical.
There is also a musical. So that's just a weird aside of like public domain stuff that you could pull from all these weird avenues, not just superheroes, but something like that.
Well, and technically Frankenstein and Dracula.
Yeah, they're technically,
everybody has one. Everybody has a Hercules.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's just different levels of douchiness to that Hercules.
Yeah.
The Marvel Hercules, pretty good guy.
Right.
The DC Hercules, no.
Yeah, and like, I guess, all the Thor and the mythology and all those kind of characters.
Yeah,
so,
right.
Yeah, but I just thought that was interesting. Like, what? Bat Boy?
Then
lots
there's
of
the
past.
Weird thing that happened with DC and Fawcett Comics when it came to Shazam and Captain Marvel.
Right.
There was a DC sued the pants off of Fawcett back in the 50s because they thought that Captain Marvel was a copy of their property, Superman. And they won the suit. I believe they won the suit.
I forget that stuff.
And eventually, when after the 50s, when the superhero, following the Golden Age of superheroes, when the popularity of superheroes died off, DC kept plugging along, but Fawcett gave up, And there was a time period in the 70s where they lost the rights to the name Captain Marvel, and Marvel Comics snatched it up.
Right.
And that's clever.
So you got Mar-Vell, the Captain Marvel. And now, and then ultimately, the irony being that DC bought the rights of Billy Batson and Shazam, but I don't think DC can use the name Captain Marvel.
They can say it inside the book.
Okay. They can't call it
but the cover always has to be Shazam or the power of Shazam or hey, look at that guy. Huh. You know, or something like that.
But it was that, but I mean, and that was the result.
My tie looks like a lightning bolt.
Was that not the result of Marvel?
Public domain-ish.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If falling into public domain.
I think so.
Yeah.
But I never researched too heavily into that.
Right.
Whenever it gets to
I skimmed my research and I may be.
Well, I made it to a point to read too much about the Miracle Man stuff, and now I never want to know about comic litigation ever again.
Ooh. Well, you and know? That was next on my list was.
Oh,
was,
it's so painful.
You know, Miracle Man, Marvel Man
Marvel
was
Man.
Just, you know, a boring.
Golden Age.
British.
Oh, it's terrible.
You know, just terrible copy of Superman.
And Captain Marvel. Yeah,
yeah. And then again, in the hands of, in the 80s, in the hands of a gifted writer of Alan Moore and Neil Gaiman, you know, turned this character into, at the time, something really clever.
Well, it's funny to think about all this public domain stuff. It's just like, so archetypes are pretty basic, you know, across the board. It's just so difficult to come up with a new name that's actually good. So, like, you know, even the Supreme, look at that. Alan Moore made Supreme worthwhile, but Supreme's just Superman. Mm-hmm. So it's just that there are just not that many good names to be had anymore. You got to go, like, so far off to create, like, the Plutonian or something like that to make another archetype for Superman. Mm-hmm. And it's just sort of like, okay, here's another one, you know.
But what makes a public domain character worth fighting over? I mean, we have tons of these characters that no one gave a rip about for a generation and a half, and then, you know, boom.
What do you call it fighting over? Because, like you said, well, everybody can do it.
I guess I'm thinking in terms of the Miracle Man litigation which has just got so ridiculous.
They were fighting over the right to print Alan Moore, which is like printing money, you know?
Point.
Always comes
and
back
Neil
to
Gaiman.
Money.
And Neil Gaiman. Yeah,
yep. So. Yep. Everybody wants it. That's why it's called money.
What was the Jeff Parker series with the white explorer guy? I for some reason, I'm blanking on it.
No, part of Agents,
Agents
of Atlas.
Not Agents of Atlas. It was a Dynamite series that he did for like 15 issues.
Flash Gordon.
Flash Gordon. Thank you.
That white explorer guy. Yeah. Yeah, but Flash Gordon. Yeah.
Thank you. It's good. That's all.
But he's not public domain.
No,
he's not.
I think he's a family estate.
Oh.
Shadow, Doc Savage. Like, so Dynamite's got those guys that they're paying for.
But they also
but that's why Dynamite's always in the corner,
from.
Like, public domain, public domain.
Okay.
We don't have to pay for a property.
Yeah, I just figured they were pretty much all public domain because cheap.
That's
I don't
deceptive.
Know.
because they have characters like the Green Hornet, the Shadow.
Yeah.
That are old, you know, Golden Age or earlier radio age.
Right.
Golden Age of radio characters that they're utilizing. That I think they still are, they're actually paying some kind of royalty on. But they're not characters that are in public demand.
Right.
They may not be in public domain, but they're not in demand.
Right.
See what I did there?
Some stuff just isn't relevant anymore or is difficult to bring a fresh take to.
Right.
You know, you have to get the right people together.
Every once in a blue moon, I'll pick up a book from Dynamite and go, oh, this is interesting. Matt Wagner did a Shadow series that I thought was, I think it was like Shadow
Year Grendel, One. The Grendel thing?
Well, that was terrific anyway, but there was like a Shadow Year One. I'm like, this is not too shabby,
right.
but for every one of those, there's like three dozen that I just want to, you know.
Yeah, totally.
They saturate.
I just want to recycle because they're so dreary.
Yeah.
All right. Public domain characters, they're out there. If you're a creator,
there's a ton of them. Go to that Wikia page and make your own webcomic.
Yeah. Hey, you know, watch our episode devoted to Octobriana. Be inspired. Tell us some Octobriana stories. We'd love to hear
Send us the link at perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com.
The paneljumper.com is where you can find the Octobriana episode. Let's move on to Book Report, everybody. And let's start with Chris. What do you want to talk about this week?
I would like to talk about Human Body Theater, the all-singing, all Dancing Anatomy extravaganza. Again, another book from First Second Press, which they do fantastic all ages material. It's by Maris Wicks, and she is absolutely charming. And she does a lot of science comics. She was the illustrator to the book Primates, which was all about the Jane Goodall?
Apes? Jane Goodall, yeah.
Yeah, Goodall. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's an apes. So this is, it's an incredibly dense book of education and science.
It's for learning.
It's so, it's every aspect of the human body, and it's being narrated by a skeleton who slowly gets, like, more muscles and body parts and interior organs, and you get, like, little happy faces on apples as they're getting eaten, and then, like, the brain is all sassy. It's just a...
Does the skeleton become a person by the end of the book?
I'm a real boy.
I think it becomes Maris Wicks. Yeah.
Oh, woman. Rather, sorry.
Yeah. So it's just really fun. It's super inclusive. It's very educational. It will take all of your children's time to go through it.
Mm. Yeah, that's a dense book.
It's dense.
Yes. Is she doing those science books that have been recently coming out? So
the new one, Coral Reefs, just came out.
Amazing wave of these science comics coming out for all ages. Fantastic. Great colors, great animations.
Look inside the skin.
Yeah. So it's not just like, hey, comics. It's also a learning. It's engaging. It's fun.
Yeah.
So cool.
And it's only $14.99. And I mean, it took me forever to read this.
It's a lot of content.
It's a lot of content. And it actually, like, I started feeling bad that I forgot things that I learned years ago.
As an adult, you really
go, that's how. Yeah. That's how babies are made. Okay.
Right. Oh, yeah.
That's what mitochondria
is. We really needed to learn anyway. This is why you get pimples, and this is how babies are made.
all things
air is important.
All right.
Oh, an air is
sometimes food.
Mm-hmm. Human Body Theater, Maris Wicks.
By Maris Wicks.
I just love the title. Yeah, it's love very the title. Cute. It's great.
All right, Nicole, what do you want to talk about this week?
I want to talk about Black Panther number 2.
All right.
Well, I don't know if I want to talk about it. I just want to say, Wakanda, why? Wakanda, why?
Wakanda, why?
Why?
Hashtag
why?
Wakanda, why?
Just for the record.
Why do you hate me so?
Bad joke theater here today.
I still need you because I love you.
Anyway, Nicole, you were saying...
Okay, so I love this title.
What time is it? We hit the punch zone.
Yeah.
It's almost 10:30.
Yeah.
Sorry, Nicole. Keep going.
I love this title. I just want to say that. I love this title. Somebody had, one of our listeners, Joe Trahan, he made mention that when you reviewed number one, he agreed with you a lot. And he also noted that Black Panther's not very prevalent. Like, if you had never read a Black Panther comic, you don't really get... his deal, because it is building off of other things. Mm-hmm. And when I read this, you know, I'm getting a bit more, but there's multiple storylines happening in this. And so it's like, here's this bit about, you know, the Dora, I was just saying that wrong. It's the warrior ladies that are lovers and they're doing their own thing. And then there's also the socio-political stuff and they're, certain little guerrilla groups are taking over certain areas and taking care of the people, which is then having them be more descent towards the government. And Black Panther is dealing with the guilt of his sister dying, who she was Black Panther. And you don't really get that story. You just know that he's dealing with that. And so it's just, it's intense, it's emotional, it's really great, but it's also just Wakanda, why? Why can't we have a good day? Just one good day, guys.
All right. Panther number 2.
I haven't read it yet, so it's going where we want it to go. Except for the
I don't know.
Except you're weeping for Wakanda, so
I'm so
don't
sad.
Don't cry for me, Wakanda.
I think we were all going
so
there.
So you get crabby with me.
Anyway,
you gotta go, Evita.
Read Black Panther, but also prepare that there might be tears.
Okay.
So there's feels.
All right. Thanks, Nicole. Cole Hornaday, what do you got for us?
Well, I read there's a collected edition of.
I'm tearing right now.
Really? Do you need a tissue?
It's fine.
Do you need
a tissue? I'll give you a topic. Amadeus Cho as Hulk. Discuss.
The Civil War was neither civil nor a war.
Oh, man. For all you youngsters, SNL. There you go.
So Amadeus Cho, Genius at Work. This is a collection of really. Can is it my turn yet?
Or yes,
is this all payback for the last 60 plus episodes where I kept walking on everybody? Oh, geez. So this is a collection of previously printed material. Nice cardstock cover. It's a little bit pricey, $7.99 for material that you could find elsewhere if you put your little mind to tracking it down. But if you want a nice little package that gives you the backstory of the Amadeus Cho, who was he's the seventh level genius, and he was a supporting character and the Incredible Hulk, Bruce Banner sidekick for a number of years, and now is the has assumed the mantle of the Hulk and is totally awesome Hulk. Totally awesome Hulk.
Great hair.
Which is a book that I'm thoroughly enjoying. This is worth reading. I've always been a fan of Greg Pak's storytelling. I think my only issue with this is that the artwork is, because they are poaching from different sources and sort of giving you background, and they're also plucking these stories out of other through lines, plot lines, it's a little bit jarring. But also, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4 different artist interpretations of how Amadeus is represented. Which, and you know, it goes from Takeshi Miyazawa's style, which is very manga-like, to Gary Frank, who I think is one of the most brilliant illustrators on the face of the planet. And then, Rodney Buscemi, who I don't really know that well. That's my only complaint, other than the fact that, you know, if you put your mind to it, you could probably find a lot of these books in a dollar bin somewhere. Mm-hmm. But if you want to save some time and you are caught up in the fun that is Totally Awesome Hulk, this is worth your time.
Mm-hmm. Rock cool. on. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks, Cole. Mm-hmm. And that's Book Report. But before we go, I want to tell you that Perfect Bound Podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. You can see everything that Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com. And Comics Dungeon here at 319 Northeast 45th Street here in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. Send us an email at perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to us any way you like your podcasts subscribed at perfectboundpodcast.com. All the .coms, and now...
all the .coms all the time.
ChrisCasseaux.com.
Put your quiz hats on, everybody. Woo-hoo. It's quiztime.com. Lay it on us, Chris.
So this one is about henchmen. It's titled, Are They Eligible for Cobra Insurance?
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I love it. Cobra.
Okay, so first one. Deadpool had a friend / psychic / meat shield who was a disenfranchised Hydra agent. What was his name?
Frank? Hank? What is his name?
John, Steve, Joe.
Bob, Agent of Hydra.
Oh, there you go, Bob. It was one of those
Didn't
guys.
Bob get his own book
He got like a
one
shot.
Wars? Yeah,
that
I actually read
Hank.
That.
Oh, see, that's who I'm thinking of.
Oh. Were they friends, though?
No, sadly. Next, the Mighty Monarch from The Venture Brothers employed two geeky yet surprisingly competent henchmen. What were their designations?
24?
Yes.
And? 19? Oh, I can't remember. 12.
I have
12.
No idea.
21.
Ah!
Dun, 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 dun.
I love it. One sounded like Ray Romano.
Doo, doo. Dun,
dun. Next one. This Terra's...
Mom, get the dog off me.
Mom, call Lady back.
Down, boy.
That was good.
Okay.
This terrorist off-branch of Hydra requires its members to at least have a master's degree, if not a PhD, in some area of science, mathematics, or business. Name the terrorist organization.
AIM.
Mm-hmm. Advanced Idea Mechanics.
The
beekeepers,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. These ninja henchmen who often fight Daredevil tend to turn to dust for easy cleanup after a fight. Who are they?
The hand.
Bonus, what other ninja clan in comics and cartoons was created as a tribute?
The Foot.
Yeah, I knew you already knew that.
Nice.
Before the show, he already like said all that. I'm like,
yeah.
Oh,
well, okay. But I've also been thinking, because I think I want to devote some Panel Jumper episode to those stories. Mm-hmm. So
cool.
I've been, yeah, kind of pursuing that. Just, right. I'm thinking out loud.
In the weeds.
In the woods.
Last one. Members of this mercenary organization, Foxhound, got a lot of really cool nicknames, such as Revolver Ocelot, Psycho Mantis, Sniper Wolf, and my favorite, Decoy Octopus. What franchise are they from?
Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah.
And I don't even play video games, and I knew that.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Well, that's great knowledge. Thank you, Chris. That's our show. Thank you for listening and or watching, and we will see you next week.
Woot!